Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, joined by Barry Trammell and Joe Masato after the Thunder's 112-111 loss to the Boston Celtics. Obviously, a very close game and a very exciting game. And a very well-played game by both teams. Up until really those last few minutes when the Thunder started making some mental errors, they, you know, had a pretty, what would have been a great comeback up until that final stretch.
Yeah, I mean, this really was an excellent game. There was great shot making, terrific offense all around, and then all of the drama that was packed into, the final seconds of this game. Gordon Hayward, instead of dribbling the ball out, waiting for a Thunder player to foul him, tries to end the game right there with a layup. Dennis Schroeder blocks him. Just a really surprising and really excellent play. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, though, gets the ball stripped from him by Marcus Smart, and that ends the game. So sort of a abrupt ending, but otherwise a really good game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame, somebody had to lose. Everybody played well, offensively, really big time. And frankly, the defense was pretty good. The Thunder got lost early in the second half. But outside of that, even, the two shots that killed the Thunder were those back-to-back threes by Kemba Walker. And he wasn't just sitting out there by himself. I mean, he was guarded. And he said, I'm Kemba Walker. I'm going to make these shots. And he just threw them in really high arcing shots, too, for crying out loud. So Boston is a team full of good players. And I thought it was an excellent matchup. Came down to the Thunder, didn't give up. Down nine with 70 seconds left and had a chance to tie in the last seconds. That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I mean, I think the guy who you feel for the most on this Thunder team was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because he played very well up until those final seconds. He hadn't had a turnover all game. He made a pretty clutch shot late, a jumper, and I will find exactly. Oh, we had a pull-up jump shot that cut the Celtics lead. Wait, no, that one was a miss. There is one in there.
Yeah, he was terrific. And
Joe was even thinking about centering a story around him. He was so good. But that turnover was very costly. That was where the Thunder, against all odds, really seemed like they were about to pull it off with down three, with just seconds left, but enough time to plenty of time to get off another shot and tie it up. And he just got outplayed by a veteran.
Yeah, but really his offensive game was on point today. He had this, kind of an in-and-out dribble that led to a Euro step, finishes it for an and one in the first half. He had a lot of those, scoop shots. He got to the rim really well. He made 3 of 4 from three. 24 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, a really good all-around game. And just looking at this box score, it's remarkable. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Danilo Gallinari, Chris Paul, and Dennis Schroeder combined for 92 points. No other Thunder player had more than 5 points. So we've talked, it seems like almost every podcast, about the balanced scoring this team has, and that's reflective in the season-long stats. But tonight, it just is so bright. It just is glaring how balanced the scoring was.
Yeah, I found that. So it was about the 5-minute mark. Shai had a pull-up running jumper, cuts the Celtics lead to 3.
Yeah, 3-pointer. Yeah.
And then a little while later, he gets free throws. He goes to the line. He misses one. Thunder was not good from the free throw line tonight. And that's kind of where his game started unraveling after being so strong for the first, all 3.5 quarters of this game, both on offense and on defense and rebounding. He had big rebounding numbers when the Thunder was really struggling in that area.
Well, He played an excellent game. That was his only turnover. One at the end is his only turnover. He had one turnover. He's 8-12 shooting. Just think about it, though. Thunder's been in a ton of close games, bunch of clutch situations. But in the last minute, the last 30 seconds of tight games, who's got the ball in their hands? Who's bringing the ball up? It's been Chris Paul, and if it's not Paul, it's been Schroeder. Hardly ever is it SGA. So this was a learning – I think this was a learning experience for him. He was going up against one of the NBA's best defenders, Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart, everybody knows him around here.
Real smart.
He's the definition of a – he's the epitome of a savvy veteran. He saw, you know, SGA unprotected the ball for just a second and Smart pounced. So you can't do that against, you know, if that's Gordon Hayward guarding him or maybe even Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, you know, get away with it. But you're not getting away with it with Marcus Smart. And it's something he'll learn from, he'll be better at, and, you know, next time it won't happen. But it happened today.
And he sure isn't going to forget it. You could just – he's sitting at his locker room post game. He had to talk to the media. Sorry, Shay. Thanks for chatting. And just, he's always very, I guess he doesn't show that much emotion in post game ever. And today it was just all very flat and serious. And you could tell he just wanted to move on from this.
Yeah. As we're finishing up our stories, Barry, I thought you brought up a good point that Marcus Smart, the player that he is now, that's sort of when you look at a guy like Lou Dort, Marcus Smart might be the ceiling for the type of player he might be and what the Thunder wants to sort of develop him into as kind of an undersized guard, but just a bulldog of a defender.
Yeah, they're built a lot alike. Dort might actually be a little thicker than Smart. The one difference is Dort's never, that I know of, been a pretty high-level point guard, while Smart can play NBA point guard. But Smart has made himself into an acceptable shooter there for a while. You know, he was ranking with Russell Westbrook as the two worst volume three-point shooters in the league. If Dort can go down that road, let me tell you who wants a player like Marcus Smart. Everybody except idiots like Minnesota or Sacramento or somebody, but anybody that knows anything about basketball wants Marcus Smart on their team. So if you can develop, if Lou Dort can become that kind of player, then that's a valuable hand.
Personally, I'm very glad we just took a shot at Minnesota because that is one of my favorite things to do.
Poor Timberwolves. It's like what's up? And the Timberwolves enemies podcast. Yeah,
it's not good for the T-Wolves. Anyway, just getting back to the game. Sorry, it took us down that Marcus Smart tangent, but the Celtics, they're just, I mean, Smart's a part of this. They're just one of the deepest teams in the NBA. They've got point guards like a star in Kemba Walker, an all-star, a starter, another all-star in Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown, who is just about at that level. Flip a coin between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who's better. Some night it flips, and all of those guys were really good and I think put a lot of pressure on the Thunder's wing rotation, which got a little out of whack.
Well, it's interesting because if you look back to last year, the Boston game was when Jeremy Grant started. It was his first start of the year, and it was Billy Donovan said that it was a matchup thing, and you can absolutely believe that. He ended up continuing to say it was a matchup thing as it was very clear that Jeremy Grant just was the starter. But against the Celtics, it really makes sense because they have, I mean, we're talking about it post game, like who's a power forward on their team? You know, they're all even their big guys are very guard-like. They have that kind of skill set, and so that's why you need Jeremy Grant to match up on guys who are that quick, and you didn't want Patrick Patterson trying to do that. And so tonight, you have a guy, they start out the game with Darius Bazley in the lineup, who's a good matchup, even though he's young and he's going to make mistakes, but physically a good matchup on some of those guys. And then he goes down with a sprained knee, update post game on how long he'll be out or anything like that, but he was out for the majority of the game and obviously the whole game after he sprained that knee. And so instead of putting a guy like Mike Muscala out there, who is kind of a Patrick Patterson type forward / big man, they ended up playing Hamidou Diallo at the four for a while. And so the Thunder went small too, and it was, I mean, it's a tough situation.
The Thunder had some crazy lineups. At one point, Terrence Ferguson, Hamidou Diallo, and Abdul Nader were all out there together, I think with Dennis Schroeder in one of the centers. So the rotations were mixed up, and, you know, you mentioned Patrick Patterson. A guy like him in Danilo Gallinari is sort of, you know, offense first, not great at defense.
You just compared Danilo Gallinari to Patrick Patterson.
Well, I mean,
poor guy.
the Celtics hunted Danilo Gallinari in the second half. Yeah. They tried to get him in every switch, in every pick and roll. And the Thunder had to hide him, and they really weren't able to without a guy like Bazley. Like, they've got to play Gallinari for his offense, but the Celtics were smart to attack him defensively.
At what point, and I don't know, everybody knows how I feel about Steven Adams, and Nerlens Noel is a fine player, but at what point do you join the small ball brigade, if you're Billy, and play Gallinari at center, you know, when that's going on? And, and you know, play Ferguson with the four scorers, or Dort, or whoever, I don't care who, and all of a sudden, then if they want to, you know, then you're dealing with Theis or Cantor, trying now. Cantor's capable of muscling Danilo Gallinari, but that takes the Celtics out of their game because that's not really what they want to do.
My favorite quote from Gallinari this season was, "If I'm playing center, something has gone wrong." But yeah, something went wrong.
Yeah, you know, I mean, our old colleague Eric Horn was making this point on Press Row, though, that like, he thought this would be a preview of the playoffs, what we see teams do against Danilo Gallinari, just trying to exploit that matchup a lot like they did against Carmelo Anthony. So, you know, that's going to be a thing where they're going to have to do some things to sort of hide that so it's not a big of a problem moving forward.
Well, I mean, then you have to make them pay on the other end. And the Thunder did some of that. Gallinari had a very good offensive game. I mean, he goes 8 of 14 shooting, gets to the line, 5 of 6 from the line, scores 24 points. And that's a pretty efficient, you know, if you look at the plus-minus, Gallinari was second on the team today, behind only Stone Cold. Or he's third, Stone Cold and Schroeder. So it wasn't like they got lit up with Gallinari on the court. So there's hits and misses, and there's pluses and minuses. But and not everybody's going to be loaded with the kind of perimeter game that the Celtics have. Celtics are an impressive team. Well, they're 30. What are they? 37-21 or 37-15 right now. So I mean, they got the fourth best record in the NBA. They're the fourth best team in the NBA right now. So, you know, there's something to be said for how good this Boston team is. And they've been playing like most teams. They haven't had their guys. This was the first time in several weeks they've had a full complement of their guys.
If you're not going to switch things up and go small, what does the Thunder have to do better? Because I know Shea afterwards was basically like, well, we got to help him out. but how sustainable is that?
I don't know. I mean, I really don't. You'd have to consistently send more help. I mean, I know Gallo's talked about wanting to be a better one-on-one defender. That might not work in some matchups, but really, the Celtics do present an impossible matchup with, I mean, I think you described it well. Like, even their big wings who are 6'8" are like, handle it like guards, and you don't run into those guys very often.
Although that's, I guess, what the Rockets are trying to do.
Yeah.
With 6'6" guys.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I don't know what it's going to look like, but it's a give and take because his offense is, you know, he's usually torching guys on offense, even if he's giving up some defensively.
Well, it's cat and mouse, and we'll just have to see what the playoff matchup looks like. But it's what the Thunder does to people. Thunder does the same thing when they throw out when they put out their four guys with Adams. I mean, the defense they're playing. Well, the Celtics today thought, well, heck, how are we going to deal with these guys? I mean, so it's become more of an offensive league because of rule changes and style play and all kinds of things, and it's just hard. It's hard to guard people. And, you know, the Thunder made a ton of mistakes today and gave up ridiculous shooting. Celtics were 16 of 36 from three-point range, and Celtics only had 9 turnovers, and yet it's a one-point game. So, you know, a lot to like even with those problems about the Thunder.
Yeah, and the Celtics took advantage of those turnovers because the Thunder scored 7 points off of the Celtics' turnover, Celtics' 9 turnovers. The Celtics scored 21 points off of the Thunder's 10. So if you're going to turn the ball over, you got to make them pay for it or get back in transition.
It's kind of crazy that, you know, we're pointing out all these numbers that barely change the game. And, like, it's like February and the expectation is that the Thunder can take a team like the Celtics down to the wire. Like, it's wild that they're even in this place where it wouldn't be surprising if they beat the Celtics at home.
And the Celtics are really good. And the Thunder played really well for most of the game.
Well, I'll just read you some of the quotes pregame and postgame from Brad Stevens. He was very, very complimentary, and it wasn't – you could tell it was – he wasn't just – he's not talking like just Detroit. You know, everybody says when Detroit comes through, oh, this is a good team. This, you know,
but we can't let up. This is about our team.
Yeah, yeah, but he said somebody asked him about the 4 20-point scores. He said, these guys do that about every night. He said, they're all 18 to 20-something. They're good players. They're hard to score on. They're hard to guard. They keep you on our heels. He said, one of the things I really like about them is how savvy they are up and down the lineup. And he said they're really connected, and I think they are. Now, the one thing about today's game, it didn't seem to me like Chris Paul had his best game.
No.
He had 3 turnovers, and a couple of them were frustration turnovers. He ended up making some clutch shot because he's Chris Paul, and he's 8 of 15. So here we're griping about Chris Paul's game when he goes 8 of 15. But CP has really connected these guys, and they are really playing, you know, on a string much different. I asked Marcus Smart how it's different, how this team is different than the ones he's played against. You know, he goes back to the Durant days playing against the Thunder. And he said, for us, the biggest was the way they play. All those guards are really crafty, and everybody on the floor is a threat. That wasn't always the case. So, this is a team that's got a lot more versatility to it than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I was in the Celtics locker room before the game trying to talk to Enes Kanter for a story, and he had like a – it wasn't a coach, but some sort of Celtic staffer come up to him like, you ready for this one? You ready for this one? They've got a lot of scrappy guys. And that kind of, you know, I thought that was interesting because I think it's guys like Chris Paul, Dennis Schroeder, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, if you're Marcus Smart and you've built a career on defense, like, this is a big-time matchup coming in and playing those three guys.
Yeah, definitely. And you had, speaking of defense, Lu Dort got the start again. And he was matched up on Kemba Walker, but he got into foul trouble real quick. So he got first 3 fouls real quick, had to sit for a while, and that meant that Terrence Ferguson played a lot of minutes, and he only took 1 shot, but I think you can tell that he's getting back into the rhythm of things. And you'd imagine on most, even on this Thunder team, if you rewound back into January when Terrence wasn't here, you're one of your best defenders goes out, you're going to see a drop-off. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case when rookie two-way player Lugens Dort gets into foul trouble and they bring in Terrence Ferguson, who had been starting all season up until Lou kind of took that spot when Terrence was out for 8 games.
Have we talked about when you asked Billy the other day about, is Lou practicing with the team? Have we discussed that?
I don't think we've talked about that.
I thought
podcast.
That was remarkable. Like, I mean, you asked Billy if he's practicing with the team. Billy said no. Which, here's a rookie two-way player who's starting for a 32-21 team, and he's not even practicing with them because of the 45-day limit.
Right, to give some of the reasoning behind people who are like, why in the world?
He's playing so well, they don't even need him out there.
He's got 45 days, really, starting from the beginning of the Blue season, to be with the Thunder. And so if the Thunder can push that off, then they can save money because two-way contract is less than a standard NBA contract. And then if they sign him to a standard NBA contract, then it's prorated. So there's no reason why they would sign him to one way before he got to the 45 days. But they would need to sign him to a standard contract for him to play in the postseason.
It just strikes me, though, they're doing a disservice to Lu Dort. Here's the deal. If he's good enough to start, find a way to get him a contract so that he can practice with the guys. I mean, that's just madness to me.
Well, and that, I think that's the spirit of the 45-day rule, right? And they took – it used to be – used to count a lot more things, but then they're like, ah, that's crazy. We're only going to count basketball activities, because it used to be also include, like, travel days and stuff. So I think the spirit of it is like, hey, if you end up having a guy who's good enough to be an everyday rotation player, he's going to use up those days really fast, and then you have to sign him to a standard contract. But until the rules change,
yeah, they're taking advantage of the rules. It's like baseball teams manipulating service time, keeping a guy down in the minors so they don't have to, so they have an extra year on their deal. So, like, it makes sense from that perspective, but it is kind of a – it's not great for Lu Dort. I mean, I'm sure he's thrilled that he's starting with the team and everything, but he's also probably waiting for a little bit bigger paycheck and to have a little more stability and everything.
And to be able to fight for his starting spot while practicing with the team.
And just, like, it's also a good sign, I think, for the Thunder that he's this good without having that additional practice time. Yeah. Billy said he's – compensating for that by watching a lot of film with him and doing that, but not on the court exercises.
Yeah, they need to figure this out. Trade Deontay Burton for something. Get him to Charlotte or someplace. But no, Dort, I thought Dort was okay today except for the fouls. I mean,
yeah, the fouls really got him. He also has been pretty fortunate with the fouls that have gone his way as he's been starting.
That's a good point.
And tonight was kind of like, oh, this is typically how a rookie gets called.
And, you know, and when you talk about Lu Dort, you're really also talking about Terrence Ferguson at the same time. And I thought Ferguson, his offense still seems completely lost. He's still the invisible man. But I thought his defense was actually better tonight.
Yeah, you know, also in that same, when you talk about Ferguson and when you talk about Dort, you also talk about Diallo, and I know we mentioned him earlier sort of playing out of position, but this is a guy who did not play in the last two games. He played 12 and a half minutes tonight, did not play well. I mean, it was a really tough matchup to come into, but it's that constant competition we're going to see now on the wing. And you know, any minutes that he can get now are probably a positive in his mind.
He looks a little lost. I was a big fan of his, but he played terrible tonight. Two huge plays. It's there midway through the fourth quarter. He's in the game playing backup power forward. And I think it was Chris Paul drove the lane and set him up for a dunk, basically, and he fumbled the ball out of bounds. Mm. Thunder was up one at the time. Celtics come down and Marcus Smart hits a three. They run another play. Somebody throws a skip pass to the corner to Diallo. He throws up a three that probably shouldn't have been taken. It bounces off. Get a transition bucket for Brown, and all of a sudden the Thunder's down four. And the rest of the game they were playing uphill. So, you know, Diallo did not look good. He's been rusty. Earlier in the year, I liked him. When he came back from that injury, I liked what he brought.
Yeah, I mean, when we talk about taking advantage of the opportunities that are given to you, like, perfect example, Lu Dort, who as Billy said pregame, wasn't even on this team before they had injuries. He was on the blue, essentially, and then came up and is now, he's played well enough that that Billy didn't feel like he could take him out of the starting lineup. But Hamidou Diallo did not do that tonight, and I don't know if it was playing out of position or maybe a little extra pressure on himself because he's been out of the rotation, or both of those things, or neither of those things, but rough night.
Rough night. And as far as that rotation, it's like, you said it, like, everyone's healthy now, and then you add a guy to a suddenly healthy team, and that means someone, like, Billy was, I don't know if annoyed is the right word, but pregame he was asked about not playing certain guys. He's like, well, I can't play everybody.
Yeah,
like,
he said so many times, I can't play 11 or 12 guys.
Yeah, which is true. You can't.
I actually saw a guy yesterday who does play everybody. Bob Huggins at West Virginia. He just plays everybody. And frankly, sometimes it doesn't work. He needs to play his best guys more. So I'm all for playing your best guys more. I got to thinking about this. Especially, I got to think, you know, load management is not a concept that's really come to the Thunder ever, really, but the way it is other teams. The future of this Thunder organization, right now, there's only about one guy that you can say, absolutely, he's the Thunder's future.
Shai.
And that's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Maybe Adams will be here a long time. Maybe Schroeder. Maybe the young guys.
Right, depending on what happens this summer.
Yeah, Baisley or Diallo or Dort or Ferguson. I mean, some of those will be here for a long time. You just don't know who. But when somebody's future is not yours, Danilo Gallinari, for example. Heck, who cares? Blame. I don't mean 40 minutes a game, but don't sit there and he'll sometimes sit out.
Yeah,
you know, he'll sit out 10 minutes at a time.
Oh, gotcha.
I mean, he'll sit out the back, you know, the last 3 or 4 minutes of the first quarter and then the first 4 or 5 minutes of the second quarter, and you keep thinking.
Yeah, but if they want to sign and trade him this summer, he can't
get
hurt.
Well, you don't want to get him hurt. That's definitely true, unless you hurt him real bad, and then maybe he's got no place to go and you get to keep him. So, I mean, I find a positive in all horizons. I'm just saying. Well, I'm saying don't – you can't go borrowing trouble is what I'm saying. So, Kawhi Leonard, yeah, I mean, you sort of signed up for that. But some of these guys – you know, Chris Paul basically doesn't get load managed. And he's 34 with a history of injuries.
Yeah.
So
he's been remarkably healthy this season.
Yeah, I mean, Gallinari is basically the only one who has. He hasn't.
He is the only one who's set up for rest.
Right. And
That was only one
even
game,
on the
right?
road, on back-to-backs, he hasn't played. It's listed as various injuries, but I think he's only played one second night of a back-to-back or maybe yeah. two, but the last three or four he hasn't. So I think they're monitoring him. He's also he's not old, but he's 31 and also has an injury history. So
yeah,
it makes
sure
sense
does.
To take care of him.
Barry says, run him into the ground.
We've got you, Gallo. We're supporting you not playing 43 minutes a night. Anything else from this one?
I was about to ask the same thing. I'm good.
It was a great
Barry,
what a great day. I love the afternoon games. I'll
great
just
day.
Say that.
Listen, nothing. You guys are way too young, but there was a time when NBA games were like a treasure. It's like getting to eat Mexican food. You know, now there's literally a Mexican food restaurant every two blocks in any city in America or south of the Mason-Dixon line, at least. You can watch, if you wanted to sit down and watch NBA basketball, you could watch about, 20 games a week, any market, without extra stuff. Just have basic cable. You're going to get to see 20 games, and you're going to get to see the end of 100 games. It was not always so. There was a time when the months of January, February, and March, you got to watch NBA basketball on Sunday afternoon. There was one game a week. You got to see it. And that's where you had to get – boned up on the league, and if you didn't watch that game, you're out of luck. And there, to me, what you said about the Sunday, whichever one of you said it, Sunday afternoon games, there's something charming about it. And frankly, the Celtics bring out that kind of romance, because it was often the Celtics or the Lakers or the Sixers, whoever. But it is a cool thing, a daytime basketball game. I only wish we had an arena like maybe at Indiana's got it, and I don't know if any other NBA arenas, but college has – some have it, you know, windows, like Allen Fieldhouse has it and a few others. Now, that would be cool if there was a way to see outside during an NBA game. That would be really cool for a day game.
Yeah. It's a good note to end on as any. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. Like it, love it, subscribe, share it with your friends, your family, your neighbors, your pets. And we will see you on Tuesday after the Spurs game.